A galactic civil war spreads across the sun. From the height of Coruscant to fiery Mustafar, to fight the evil empire, four people join the fray. These are the heroes of the Hydean Way.
Welcome to Heroes of the Hydean Way. This is normally a live play podcast that explores published adventures set in the Fantasy Flight Games Star Wars RPG line. Our story just recently was Friends Like These, and it can be found as a standalone module. This is our discussion episode, Part 1. And I'm Ben, normally the GM for these adventures.
Hi there, I'm Christine, and for Season 1 and Friends Like These for Heroes, I played Captain Nima Ptolemy, the Myriallan Commander.
And I am Brent, and I would normally be playing your fun, lovable droid, Amp, formerly known as TV-93.
Let's see, Matu Ordo character sheet. Let me just say more.
Been wanting to do that for years.
It's totally staying in.
Hey, I'm Chris. Ignore that last part. I'm Chris. Hey, everybody.
And you both skipped over Leslie, so Leslie, why don't you round us out?
I wasn't told when I was supposed to go, so I just assumed I was last because I know how this works.
That's a good attitude for your life in general. Just assume that you're last.
But I am Leslie, and I played the Bothan of the group, who did not die.
Spoilers!
This is after!
And if you're listening to these episodes out of order, person, shame on you! That's not how it's supposed to work. Order exists for a reason. That's why it's first. Oh, wait.
So as Ben mentioned at the top of the show, this is a discussion episode. So I have here a stack of questions from our listeners that we're going to go through. But first, I actually wanted to begin with a bit of feedback we've received that really made our day.
Tell that guy to screw off. Oh. Wait, he says good. Never mind.
Okay, we've received an email from Renee that read, "I did not expect to love the show so much. My friends and I are new to tabletop RPGs, and I was thrown in the GM chair. While we've always had fun, I feel pretty lacking as a GM. After listening to you guys, I realized I was trying to play too seriously, and I stuck too much to the modules written. The exact moment I realized this was when Raimi sent a music virus and made a conga line of droids. Star Wars is fun. Listening will definitely improve my storytelling and especially how I use modules. I have been enthralled with Matu's Force journey. The episode where he interacted with Plo Koon was just awesome. Thanks for including that. I'm looking forward to more. Thanks for all the efforts in the show. I'm really dreading catching up and having to wait for new episodes. Keep up the good work."
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, you break them module rules. You do that. Do it.
I've broken down the questions that we've received into a few different categories. We had some that were like player specific, kind of geared towards a specific character. We had some that were just sort of for the players as a whole, some for everybody, some for the GM.
Probably still Chris.
What?
What?
Oh no, we've got questions for everyone.
We have questions for everybody. In fact, because of that snarky comment, Leslie, do you want to start us off?
Uh-huh.
I don't have the questions in front of me.
Well, I'm going to read this one to you. So this is from our friend Seamus, who we make fun of a lot on the show.
Seamus, why did you kill that guy? Why? There was no need.
Hey, Seamus sent in a lot of really awesome questions.
Well, that doesn't excuse him from killing a man.
From murder.
Just to watch him
right.
Die?
Wasn't it like involuntary manslaughter? I don't remember how the story
works. He drugged the guy who was very clearly already drugged.
Leslie.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, what? Who are we talking about?
What is Kith's backstory? What happened at the garage that drove her to join the rebellion?
Thank you, Seamus. I take it all back.
I think by this point we have a right to know.
Yes. I even saw this one come up on Twitter.
Did it? Oh, I thought, okay. Kith worked at a garage on a I think the word I used was cosmopolitan. It was a fairly mixed group planet. The Empire decided to start using resources, and as they are wont to do, they began to take over. The members of the group that ran and worked at the garage kind of started to resist without Kith, but she's, you know, 110% kid sister and tagged along. Things went awry, and she was more or less rescued from capture and torment after they blew up some Imperial, I don't know if they were scouts, whatever they were. So she was brought on board for her own safety. And then the downfall of the Empire.
Now, I know personally that there is more to that story. Are you saving that for a possible reappearance somewhere down the road?
Sure. Let's go with that and not the fact that I can't remember the details of the story I wrote for her.
I thought Kith wasn't actually her name.
Well, it's not, but I mean, that's not really backstory. That's lifestyle choices.
Well, that's part of the backstory. There's a story there.
How can your name not be part of your backstory?
Yours wasn't.
Totally was.
Kith chose to take her name to protect her family, who thinks she's dead. Or that she thinks that they think that she's dead. There's lots of thinking going on.
You should proclaim your name proudly at every possible opportunity.
Yeah, you go back to your home world
cool
and
weapon.
Live under the same name to hide.
Crap, he did get me a cool weapon. Okay, write me a speech for the cool weapon you got me.
But I don't know your name, so how am I supposed to do that?
Is Kith any less my name than Amp is his?
I am Betty Boffin of the Clan Boffin.
That's not how it works.
This is an axe that I stole from a guy.
Well, actually, you stole it. Does it count as stealing if he dropped it?
I mean, it wasn't yours. The same.
This is an axe. Yeah,
somebody puts their bag down and you take it. Aren't you still a thief? Speaking of the whole TV-93 amp thing, Seamus wanted to know from Brent, was the personality switch from TV-93 to amp always part of the plan? If not, what drove you to make the change?
Wow, Seamus is all deep.
He's got more. He threw a lot of questions at us, for which I'm very grateful.
Now, no lying on this.
There's no what?
Now, no lying on this.
No lying. Okay.
Wait, he said okay like he was considering it. Wait
yep.
a minute.
it's a really good lie. Are you sure?
Just how much Brent is in amp and or TV?
So TV-93 was a manically depressed robot, and some people, I don't know, have noticed a certain similarity with Marvin, the paranoid android from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. And that is not coincidental, of course. I'm a fan of the series and a fan of Marvin, the paranoid android, so I did want to play that type of character. As we got closer and closer to the conclusion of the first module, Dead in the Water. Thank you. A couple things were going on. One, I didn't think that a whole another series of paranoid android manically depressed robot was necessary. I kind of thought we'd been there and done that. And I also wanted TV-93 to have an arc. I wanted him to end someplace where he wasn't when he started. So mission accomplished there, I think. As far as Amp himself, that was intentional. So if you look at TV-93 and you look at Amp, they're the same fundamental character, right? There was, you know, maybe 20 experience points different between them. Same character sheet. They're both snipers and slicers and all that kind of stuff. What was important to me was, since I'd kind of gone through this whole period of manically depressed robot, was to change him in a way that, other than the removal of the restraining bolt, which I can talk about more later, the transformation from TV-93 to Amp was really just a change of attitude. He got his restraining bolt off, and he just decided to see the world differently. You know, he's still in the same situations. He's still being shot at. He's still shooting other people in the head, all that kind of stuff. But he just chose to see the world differently. You know, the same things were happening to him, but he was responding to them differently. And so I just thought that was kind of a cool dynamic of, you know, because life is hard. And it's hard for a lot of people. And I think that if we can just change the way we look at things and just sort of choose to be happy to the extent that we can have a whole different life. And so that's kind of what I was going for with the transition there.
Well, now I have a follow-up question for you. So why the, like, why the name change from that character's perspective then? Because it always, like, seemed to me like there was some sort of distancing for him there. I also might be projecting a little bit being transgender and having done a name change myself of, like, I kind of related to that in terms of I'm going to make this a new identity. I am a different person than I was.
Yeah, and there's kind of a rich history of that, of, you know, people changing their names when large events happen in their lives. You know, you see that kind of all over the place, all over history and stuff. And so I wanted him to have a different, I wanted him to have a different name just to signify the difference between the two. And so that would be easier to refer to. I was also watching Twin Peaks at the time, and Dr. Amp on Twin Peaks is kind of a major character that I thought was pretty hilarious. And so I just stole the name from there, but I thought it worked out pretty well.
See, now, if this were an assignment in an English class, you would say, compare and contrast how TV's changing of name relates to his changing character, as well as Matu's changing character, but his lack of change in name, right? A 2-3 paragraph essay using citations, MLA format, double space.
Please submit to heroes@theheidianway.com.
It will give you extra credit.
It will be graded.
I will grade it. I will grade your essay. If you send me an essay, I will 8,000% grade it.
And I will send you
he's
stickers.
An actual teacher.
You can tell I'm an English teacher because 8,000% is not accurate.
Yeah.
It's great how that's like a prize.
Yeah, well, the best Heroes of the Hidean Way possible contest. Write an essay and I'll tell you what you did wrong.
That should be a new background.
And I'll still
level.
Send you stickers.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Chris, you ready for your personal question?
Yeah, I think so. My daughter just bashed her head open, but I think she's okay. She's okay.
Open. She's open implies
she's
not
she's
okay.
She's fine. Walk it off, kid.
Bashing your head is one thing. Open is bad.
She's fine. It's just a little blood. It's fine.
It's funny because this actually relates to a later question that gets asked. But we'll get there eventually. So Chris, Dead in the Water doesn't have anything related to the Force, and Friends Like These only has some bare hints of it. In retrospect, how do you feel the modules interacted with a Force-sensitive character like Matu? By the way, this was also a Seamus question.
They don't. they don't. In fact, I think it's a credit to Ben's ability to GM that it works, because I just threw, well, I mean, you heard the episode where I said I had this dumb idea in the car and I'm going to do it. And then we did it.
Dumb. Awesome.
You know, on that episode, I mean, nobody knew I was doing it beforehand. It wasn't like, hey Ben, what do you think about this? I just showed up and I'm like, I'm doing this Force thing. And everyone just had to deal. And I just constantly threw Force 4C all over the place, but, you know.
Yeah, that we noticed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's going to turn into, like, episodes worth of tales.
I think the only benefit the module has in an Age of Rebellion versus, like, the other systems is that you can codify good and evil by, like, Rebellion Empire. So that sort of Matu being a representation of the good things in the galaxy can be equated to like the goodness of the rebellion, etc. So I think it would have been trickier with an Edge module where the morality is supposed to be grayer, but because Age is like, you know, one side versus the other, I think it fit okay. But I think mostly it works because of Ben.
Well, thank you.
So then I have a Seamus question as well as a question from Mr. David Pickering. Which I'm going to start off with David's because it's a little bit shorter. On a scale of lime to forest, how green did Nima blush when Kith brought out her party dress on Kowak?
Which is technically more green?
This was a most absolutely needed question.
Yes, and you know what? It's funny because I'm the one with the questions in front of me. And do you think I prepared anything?
Viridian.
No. I did
Viridian.
Not prepare any answers.
Ooh, nice.
I think she was pretty dang green when that dress came out, because she basically put up with it because it was the only way to make Kith go ahead and put on a dress herself. Because that is not Nima's style in any way, shape, or form. She tends towards more of the kind of the butch side.
Pantsuits.
And
bad attitudes.
Yeah, yeah. And you gave her a like a slinky, like one shoulder what was it, gold sequin dress?
Shimmer. I don't know if we actually went with sequin, but yes, it was not subtle. And Chris helped.
Yes, considerably. So I actually yeah, so I think the blush was considerable, but given that she's pretty good about keeping things kind of concealed, I think she did okay there. I think when she turned the bright forest green was actually with Amp's reactions back aboard the ship when she changed and Amp thought she was somebody different and began to head off.
That I liked. That was actually kind of fun.
I think that caught her off far more than the reveal of the dress itself. Then my Seamus question is, if Nima had stayed behind on Co-op, did you have another character in the works or an NPC you were going to take control of?
Nope.
Which this is a great question because I didn't have another character in the works. Like that was something that kind of was like vaguely in the back of my head. And then when Chris like threw that curveball at me, like I was staring down at where like that was a possibility. If like Kith and or Amp had been like, yeah, stay here, you know, help these people, then yeah, Nima wouldn't have been in Act 4. I wasn't that worried about it because if we had gone that route at that point, I was playing several other characters like Lyra Hardin and Mrs. Ordo. And characters of that nature where I think we could have easily have grabbed one of them or even brought in Agent Alico early, especially when things went to the Star Destroyer assault and have me had played one of those for the final act.
I'm going to stay here and we'll call my sister Fema Ptolemy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's go with the entire Super Troopers idea. Sure.
Can I just say, can you imagine a whole act with Ma Ordo and Amp and Ma too?
That would have been pretty great. I just want to think of what we could have been.
That we would have had like Dawn of Rebellion would have been out by then. It would have been amazing.
Well,
anyway,
I might even have been able to actually do the Mando accent by the end of it. So that's it for kind of individual player questions, but then we had a couple of really good group ones, some of which are also going to kind of bleed into the GM side of things.
All right, let's do the player stuff first.
Yep. Also from Seamus, the duty mechanic. I've had a lot more trouble with duty compared to obligation, I'm afraid. What did everyone think of the mechanic? Did it help you play the characters? Was it important enough? And would you have done anything different with it?
I don't like any of those mechanics. I don't use obligation for edge. And I mean, you kind of have to use morality for Force and Destiny. Although it is apparent that I apparently don't know all the rules very well for Force and Destiny. But duty, I don't know. I think it's a good tracker for the contribution rank aspect. I think that helps you slow down as a GM going like, oh, you did great. Here's everything you possibly want. I think that's a good mechanic to say like, no, you need to do more for the rebellion to earn that stuff.
Earn your keep.
Yeah, because especially like someone like me, well, I tend to give out too much stuff. I think that would help me to put on the brakes a little bit.
And conversely, for someone like me who's ranking a test, I'm horrible at giving out credits. Or just anything.
Characters begging on the street for their next meal.
Pretty much.
Yeah, the credit thing can confirm also for the first season of Heroes. I think like outside of the one like equipment requisition, we had what, less than 1,000 credits the entire
you
game
also had
for the poll party.
Like for that entire thing, you had 53 hours. Like we did an entire season in 53 hours. How are you supposed to be getting a lot of equipment?
That I don't know. That is something though. I'm hoping we'll actually just have a larger timetable for season two. Like, you kill me.
Ben's already like, well, technically it'll be a larger span of time by 24 hours.
Oh no, it, They're actually... I'm working much better with giving out coin now, especially in an edge-style campaign.
That's true.
Everyone else on duty, what you guys were thinking, what y'all were thinking?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Chris. I like getting the stuff, and I like the recognition. I think for me, the system just feels a little mechanical, where it's just kind of number-based, and you're kind of going up on a number track. I think that's probably simpler, and if it was more complicated, I probably would complain about that too. but I almost might like it more if, you know, you were achieving ranks or something like that, which is something that the GM can totally do if it's appropriate for the campaign. It'd be real easy just to map the numbers over to something a little more narrative. But I guess my beef with it, if I had one, would be just it's a little mechanical, it's a little crunchy. But yeah, I guess as I get older and stuff, I'm getting more and more hippie in my RPG tastes anyway, so that might just be me.
There's actually a whole Tales episode out there that documents this. I love obligation. I really, really like that mechanic and the way it works in every way, shape, and form. Morality, I feel like, works pretty well too, but this was really my only experience with duty. And I liked actually a lot of how it worked for Dead in the Water. It felt like kind of some of our different choices sort of like, you know, that affected those numbers. It kind of helped give each of our characters our different sort of focus on things. But something that was sort of disappointing actually both there and especially like in Friends Like These is depending on where the story is and what's going on, you're a lot more limited on opportunities to earn certain kinds of duties, like sabotage or, say, enemy demoralization. Yeah. And that felt a little weird. Like, I always looked at the duty as kind of like a character thing to help direct me. Like, this is something my character puts first. But I don't know. It didn't have the same, like, narrative implications that I find, like, obligation does.
Yeah. That stuff. Obligation makes the most sense to me. Duty almost makes sense, and I do not understand hide nor hair of the morality thing, so I'm just along for the ride.
Yeah, there's a reason why we're doing Edge next instead of Force and Destiny, because I need a little bit more time to finish figuring out morality in a actual play podcast. And since it's one of the semi-stated goals is trying to run the system as close to rules as written as possible, we theoretically should be using the mechanic.
The nice thing about it is that you get to say duty.
Hey, we got over that giggle fit.
No, I've never gotten over it.
I've gotten good at muting myself.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. So everyone just got good at muting, or Christine was really good at cutting it after a while. The only thing that I really had a issue with in duty for this was now at the end of the adventure, I really feel that I should have pressed harder for Amp's duty to change. That TV's was very much enemy demoralization. Amp just never really... Amp wasn't the same character in trying to demoralize.
I sort of figured that shooting people in the head was demoralizing.
In a very specific way.
That's more a combat victory.
It's either combat victory or like the way that Amp was doing
support?
It. No, the one that I was more thinking is placard counter, which is in there somewhere.
Oh, like, you're right.
Like going because Amp always was going for the high value target. He always like
right.
He was.
I actually totally agree. That would have been great. Never even occurred to me.
Yeah, like that's because Matu was very, very combat focused. Like, doesn't matter what, Matu is there to try and slice and dice it. Combat victory makes so much sense. The way Nima worked out in doing, even when she wasn't seeing eye to eye with her squad, she was still worried about them as a squad. And Kith, it took forever to get Kith to the position where sabotage was going to start working. But I also knew that Act 4 sabotage would just be the whole thing. Like, pretty much from the Slave Rebellion on, was just going to be, opportunities for, oh, I'll sabotage this, I'll sabotage that, I'll sabotage that. So it's like,
throw
it starts
the
off.
Pry bar.
The mythical pry bar now.
Pry bar of mightiness.
Yeah. At this point, if it was a D&D or, I don't know, Starfinder thing, I'd be thinking that it's like a +3 pry bar at this point.
It's a mithril pry bar.
Which one? Because there's now been numerous pry bars.
Well, no, the one that took out the AT-ST. Because that one.
Okay, like, so pry bar the second.
That one got used twice on that AT-ST and just destroyed the thing. Yeah. Like, it was
that
amazing.
Was the rescued pry bar. It was thanking me for saving it from rusting away to nothing, giving it purpose once more.
Using the duties as sort of a expansion as or a focus for the characters seems to it works and sort of gives this extra background thing, which does generally align with the characters how they're presented, other than the mismatch between TV and amp. So in general, I like it. Would I use it in my home game? If we were to ever do an age game, yeah, I probably would. Now that I know a bit more of the ins and outs. And if we ever end up doing Onslaught at Arda 1, I can absolutely see using Duty in that one as well.
How many hours do the players get in that game?
Oh, there's an entire exploration thing where it takes days, even weeks.
Ooh.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
Change of pace.
Oh, yeah, like friends like these, you've got everything building up to this mass combat thing. Like this protection thing. The end of Rebels Season 3 or... In a very weird way, The Last Jedi, the way that ends. With Onslaught at Art of One, it's almost Empire Strikes Back in the way that it works. Is it starts off with, after a little introduction, you have a Hoth. And then you've got everyone fleeing from that. Hopefully, maybe. But that's way down the lines. We've got to get through like 3 other adventures first.
Yes. I was going to save this a little bit later on, but given we're talking a bunch about the timing now, we had numerous people ask variations about the time situation. And so, while you had a lot more time to work with than in Dead in the Water, you were still on the clock throughout Friends Like These. Was there enough pressure? Did it seem like the clock mattered, or did it not really do enough? What, if anything, would you do differently?
Did anyone feel impacted by it? Like,
no. I think the problem with it is that you never have to make a really hard choice because of the time. I think if you had to pick between Kowak or the Mandalorians, that's a better setup.
Yeah, I... Kind of following on Chris, is I would chop the time in half. Keep all the actual... I'm taking a look at the final time, and you guys are jumping back from Kowak at 24 hours remaining. I have you landing at 17 hours left. And you did a slave revolt in there that I wasn't exactly being kind on for the amount of time between. Like, I could have... There are many places where I could have stolen an hour here and an hour there. And maybe a little bit more should have come off on the Mandalorian world, on Fleemuth Port, but...
But the thing is that it felt like the intention is you show up, you find out the situation, you need allies, you're told about the Mandalorians, you're told about the slaves, so you go to one, you pick one of them first, and then you go to the other one, and then you come back. I think if it were designed so you had to pick one or the other, or split your party and try to do both... That's a worse choice. And I think then I would feel it a lot more.
Or if it had ended up being more of a gauntlet, like that's kind of what I expected is like, okay, well, by the time we get to Act 4, like we're going to already have used some of our stim packs for the day and several of us will have crits we just can't heal. And we're going to be in a, you know, we've been in through so many fights, like this major one's going to be an issue. Instead, we went into Act 4, you know, full up.
Yeah, but I think, the way we play this is not in a vacuum. So we know this is a show. We know there's got to be an ending. And I think you know, we know, like, okay, so in theory, Ben could, like, shave off hours to the point where, well, you didn't make it back in time. Or, like, you know, the battle's on halfway done, and you're only going to be able to salvage a scrap of the ending. But we also know that's not a very satisfying ending. So I think if, you know, if you're running this in a campaign at home, you're more likely to go like, oh, you screwed it up. So now you've got to do this next mission to kind of recover the thing.
Well, okay. One or two things that, like, first off, Brent, you had a thing or two that you're trying to cut in with.
I was just wondering, so are there ramifications depending upon which one of the things you choose to do first? You know, when you go to the second one, is the situation different?
Not really, no.
Yeah. I think for me, that's kind of what was missing with the clock, because I've been playing some Gumshoe and stuff, and they're kind of more into sort of mapping out the narratives of the stories and being a little more strict in kind of the flow between the scenes. And, well, not strict, but having repercussions. And so I think what would be more effective for me than the clock would just be that the repercussions of those choices, that if you go and you do A, when you go to B. So like in a Gumshoe adventure, you can go and rescue somebody's father, or you can go and stop the bank robbery. You know, you got these two things happening at the same time. And if you go and you stop the bank robbery, the guy's father's going to be dead when you get there. And if you go and save the guy's father, then you save the guy's father and the bank gets robbed. So I think those sort of choices are make me more thoughtful than just a clock is ticking and, you know, which one am I going to do first?
If there's
no repercussions.
Yeah, that makes a huge amount of sense. Like, the entire reason why we didn't do an extra session on Vlemeth Port was because, honestly, I felt like we were just kind of milling there. But if I was doing this in a home game, I would do the exploration, especially of trying to get the those Mandalorian cadets a lot more. Because, like, it was the meteor choice that I was trying to get people to go with, and it's like land, do a little bit of investigation, explore after, actually feel like your character's in peril in trying to get to the Tal's camp, and then get into like single combat or not being able to talk them down properly, like completely by accident. It really felt like this was an ideal team for this.
When I don't think we should have been at all. Like, we didn't have a lot of survival skills. I had one survival talent that aided us.
Well, I'm just meaning as a whole. Like, as a whole, I'm going with it was sort of like an ideal one because...
Oh, for friends like these.
Yeah, like, having Matu, especially the way Matu was, having Matu being a force user, having Kith, like... And then also the Nima, Kith, Amp... triumvirate. Whatever Matu couldn't deal with by being the physical one, the other three could deal with in the skills that they had.
Now, some of that was was sort of on purpose, though. Like, I remember back when we were first discussing the characters, like, I mean, none of us, you know, we didn't sit down and go, oh, well, we need to have a social character and a combat character. But we did think about, like, what roles should we have? Like, what tools should we have available, knowing we were going to do friends like these? Like, I remember you bringing up the leadership front and the social side, you know, and I knew enough, you know, going into it that there was going to be negotiations and there was going to be mass combat.
That was more for the mass combat part. I honestly think that the tack that Chris took, like, in all seriousness, Chris, you took such a different tack than anything that was either in the book or just I would normally expect from players for how the clan was being dealt with as Mandalorians. Like, not seeing the... Like, trying to rekindle being honorable warriors as opposed to being mercenaries. That, to me, as a GM, that really sort of rung into something interesting. And I could see that sort of growing. And that's the reason why the roles worked and went that way. And why you were able to convince them. Like, it made so much sense, but I don't see other players doing that. I can see that section, especially that negotiation, being a lot more arduous for people.
to round out kind of our player section, we had a few questions from Stan. And I'm going to go and start off with a lighter one here. Did any particular Star Wars or other media influence your initial character concept or their development?
Yeah, I think I mentioned this a long time ago, but Candorous Ordo from Knights of the Old Republic, that's basically him, especially at the beginning. That template of, wow, the Mandalorians sure suck, I need to like fix them. And bring them back to being great, honorable warriors, which kind of touches to what Ben was just talking about. That's basically Candorous Ordo's entire character. And then I think after that, I mean, mostly I wanted to be a Mandalorian because I like doing the accent. and I think one of my favorite characters are all the clones from the Clone Wars, and Dee Bradley Baker's, you know, clone voice is one of my favorite ones that he does.
That's legit. So,
you know, I think those two things were primary influencers.
Brent?
We already discussed Marvin.
Was there one for
Ant? But that's not a Star Wars character.
What?
It did say Star Wars or other
media. You don't know that.
Well, curious. So did you see Solo?
I have not seen Solo yet.
Oh, okay. Because the whole time I was like, I wonder what Brent's going to think of his droid. Because there's like a very cranky droid in that movie.
Ooh, approve.
Who hits on humans?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I'm like,
where's my check, Lucas?
Yeah. Basically,
Disney. It's
Disney now. Disney, right?
And was very concerned with droid rights.
Wow, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I definitely L3 made me think of Amp on several occasions.
Yeah, the two of them would have gotten along.
I initially wanted to play some kind of a sneaky droid, like a Viper droid or an Assassin droid or something like that. But it turns out in the system, it's fairly difficult to do a ninja sort of character. I have not figured it out despite a couple of attempts.
Realms of Terranoth could do that.
Oh, I'll have to go through. I have that book. Yeah. I haven't looked at it yet.
There's a talent that lets you do melee stuff with agility.
Or cunning.
Ah, in Terranoth?
Yeah.
Because I think you can probably do it in Force and Destiny, but I was trying to do it either in Age or Edge and haven't been able to figure it out. So that's good to hear. So yeah, I kind of started wanting to do the sneaky assassin droid, and that didn't really work out. And then in another one of Ben's campaigns, I tried to do the sneaky ninja thing anyway and just ended up going guns, and that worked out pretty well. But then once kind of thought of Marvin and all that kind of stuff, and then later Dr. Amp, that's kind of how it went.
So the answer is no, there were no Star Wars characters that influenced you at all.
I was influenced by all of them.
All right.
Leslie, what about you? Any Star Wars or other media that influenced Kith?
Probably. I don't know, man. Like,
I'm just going with Surf Ninjas and from there.
In spite of references, there was no inspiration for Kith directly drawn from there. I mean, I guess the closest you could go, which is not Star Wars, Chris, I admit it.
Spaceballs.
Kaylee from Firefly, because there's a kid,
yeah,
a young lady mechanic, but she really wasn't Kaylee?
Oh, yeah, no. But
I mean, aside from being young and enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I picked a Bothan because they were cool, and a mechanic because when I've been out of state, I have slept, I've walked through a million doors. I have no idea why I rolled up Kith. Seemed like a good idea at the time.
And I mean, I think we've talked about this several times before about this sort of being Kith's origin story. But I think if you really, and this is just how my brain works, I tend to think thematically. So if you were to, again, write an essay about the themes of Heroes of the Hiding Way Season 1, you could really see this as an exploration of identity, right? So Amp has one identity, or TV has one identity and then intentionally changes all of it. Matu's has an identity that he loves, but is like forced to adhere to something different when he realizes that there's something else in him. And then Nima kind of has to reclaim her identity as not a broken drunk, but as like a loving human being with a functional relationship. And it's sort of like, for Kif, it's like, wow, I don't really have much, you know, I'm new to this and I'm looking at these three people explore identity in different ways. And so, you know, if this were going to be a sequel, you could watch Kif try to apply those lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And the axe.
One day, maybe. One day.
Oh, yes.
And lastly, for Nima, I didn't have any, like, direct Star Wars characters I drew inspiration from. I will say I did read, like, the Darth Maul, Shadow Hunter, and Jedi Twilight, and a bunch of the old Legends novels that took place on Coruscant, which may have been, like, rattling around in my brain when I was deciding, like, where she came from. In terms of other media, I will say the idea for the shield and the kind of like SWAT cop thing came from Rainbow Six Siege, of which I play some of that game, and I've watched Let's Plays and stuff like that. And I saw this like probably a year before we did Heroes, and I thought, like, you know what? That would be interesting to see that kind of in a Star Wars environment, which is what ultimately ended up happening. Otherwise, like, I went Mary Allen because Ben was kind of looking for us to have more human or human-ish representation. And in terms of my near humans, I like the Mary Allens and their culture, with the, like the symbolic tattoos and things of that nature, which is less, I guess, directly like derived from any Star Wars character. I guess, like, I did like watch like Luma, Nora, Unduli, and Barriss Offee from like the Clone Wars, and various other like novels and stuff like that to try to like glean any other little Mary Allen things.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Heroes of the Hydian Way. You can find show updates on Twitter at The Hydian Way, and you can find me, Ben, on Twitter at Deuterium Ice.
You can find me on Twitter at 12th Night. That's 12th Night with a K.
And you can find Brent over at Twitter at iBrentBrown. Oh, pickup line. not a day go by that I don't think about you.
Leslie GS.
You can find more of me at Silhouette Zero, a podcast about aliens. That's silzeropodcast.com. Like the show Twitter, Silzero Chris, SilZero. Nope, can't do it. SilZero. And then my personal Twitter is at IngDaydream.
And we are all at theHydianWay.com, where you can find previous episodes and our sister podcast, Tales from the Hydian Way.
Our podcasts are on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, where you can find more episodes and help us out by rating and reviewing the show.
We are also at Facebook as Heroes of the Hydian Way.
You can drop us a holocom at heroes@thehydianway.com.
If you like what we do and want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thehydianway.
Or you can donate a coffee to us over at ko-fi.com/thehydianway.